Buddy, here we go. It is hour number four of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan, and we are now one day from the Major League Baseball trade deadline as we get set to chat with Jared Sandler. Rangers looking to salvage one in Anaheim tonight. Pregame coming up at 8:30, first pitch at 9 o'clock. Jared Sandler brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing, and a good evening, sir. How the heck are you?
What's up, guys? How's it going? Exciting countdown for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, isn't there? Let's just start with an open question to you on what's the latest buzz and what you think is going to happen.
Well, I think the latest buzz is that the Rangers, like a lot of teams, are, you know, they're on the horn. And I don't know, you know, I think Zach asked about Pete Fairbanks the other day. They're obviously, you know, he's been tied to the Rangers. Ryan Helsley's been tied. Joan Duran. I mean, here's the deal. If there is a reliever on a team that is looking to sell, then chances are the Rangers have investigated or made a call about that individual, right? The relief market is a lot tougher to forecast compared to, hey, if you need a catcher, you kind of know that, you know, these guys might be the ones available. Or if you need a right-handed hitting first baseman, well, hey, these two guys are the ones that make the most sense. So, when you're looking at role players to fill out a bench, you're looking at relievers. I don't want to say the options are endless because there's obviously only a finite amount of players, but it really could come from one of a number of teams and one of several players on the bench or in the bullpen or, you know, who fits into a platoon. I don't know that I'm hearing a lot of names, but I'll be honest, we hear a lot of names every year, and I don't know how much credence to put in any one individual name, but what I can tell you that I do feel good about saying is that the Rangers are actively looking for a right-handed bat, and they're looking for a reliever or two, and they would love for one of those relievers to be someone they can stick into a high-leverage opportunity in the playoffs, right? We always talk about acquiring a starting pitcher. Is he a guy who will start a playoff game for you or not? I think there's a similar line with a reliever where it's like, do you trust this guy protecting a lead in one of the final three innings or not? And you can be a contributing reliever to a postseason team if the answer is no, but I think you're willing to pay a little bit of a higher price to someone for whom the answer to that question would be yes.
What do you think of the Suarez idea that Evan Grant wrote about? The most intriguing bat on the market is Suarez. Is that something Rangers fans can think about or dream about? And where would you see him slotting in?
Well, the Rangers, you know, haven't gotten production from the DH spot. So that is absolutely, a possibility. You know, if you feel like he's better off there and Josh Young continues to hit, then maybe that's the answer. The thing with Suarez, I don't know. Do the Rangers want to give up what it will take to give up for a rental? And a rental, by the way, who's, you know, he's not super expensive this year by any means, but you're going to probably have to clear money to get him. The one thing that, you know, I did see Evan Wright, which I think it makes total sense. If the Rangers do, in fact, decide, you know what, screw it, we're going to go over the luxury tax, then you may as well just go ape crap, right? I mean, there's no reason why, you know, you only need to go over by a few million dollars. But if you're going to get Eugenio Suarez, based on what we believe to be the Rangers' financial situation, then, they'd probably have to make a counter move to make money available. I do think that move would make sense. He's a right-handed hitter. He hits a lot of home runs. He's not a guy who you'd have to play against only lefties, excuse me. He's a guy who'd be in there, righties and lefties. And the one thing that, you know, you get with Eugenio Suarez, he's going to strike out a lot. He's not going to walk a lot. So that is one thing you got to kind of balance here. Do you feel like you can, have a competitive lineup? If you add Eugenio Suarez, it's not like he's the problem. But I'd say this, guys, if you add Eugenio Suarez, I wonder if that maybe means that the Rangers decide to change, you know, their outlook on Adolis Garcia, because, you know, at some point we've talked about roster and lineup balance. And, again, it's not like there's not a room or not a place for Eugenio Suarez, but, you know, maybe do you have to now add some patience and some plate discipline in another spot for one of the guys who maybe is currently in your lineup who doesn't necessarily bring that.
Jared, outside of Sebastian Walcott, do the Rangers have pretty desirable prospects that would be of interest to these teams?
More on the pitching side, I'd say. I don't know how teams view Malcolm Moore, who is probably the Rangers' second best position player prospect, depending on how you want to slot in Gavin Fien, their first-round pick, who won't get moved. You know, my guess is Malcolm Moore is not a guy, is a guy that could add value, but not a guy that a team would necessarily center a deal around for a player like Eugenio Suarez. On the pitching side, you do have some desirable pieces, right? Alejandro Rosario and Winston Santos and Cole Drake. You've got Jose Corniel, who's back. You know, even though Emiliano Teodo has not had the type of year the Rangers would have liked, because I think the expectation was by this point he'd maybe be helping out the big league bullpen. You know, I don't think that there's a team that would look at him and say, yeah, I'm not interested in him right now. Again, he probably isn't going to be the headliner for a deal, but he's a guy who, you know, could certainly be of appeal. So I think more so on the position or on the pitching side than the position player side. But, you know, if the Rangers were going to move Sebastian Walcott, it would obviously be for a guy who's going to give them multiple years of control and be kind of that all-star type caliber player. As great as Eugenio Suarez has been this year, because he's a free agent to be, it probably wouldn't make sense that Sebastian Walcott's the guy that, you know, you use as the headliner in that deal.
So I haven't seen a lineup yet for today, so it's possible that Jock Peterson's back in it going up against a righty pitcher. But he did get the pinch hit at bat last night. But what's the thinking about Jock? They don't really have a lot of time and patience, I think, to allow him to get going. And if he's not hitting, what's the move moving forward for him?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Zach. They owe it to themselves. The best version of this team right now, right, separate of trades, is one in which Jock Peterson's hitting. But it's obviously not a guarantee, right? He's got to start hitting. But I think they owe it. They owe it to their intuition this offseason to sign him, to give it more than just a few days post IL to see if they can get him going. But the tricky part is that tomorrow is the last day you can really add a meaningful external player or a player externally. And so they've got to ask, you know, do we need to add someone as protection? Like someone who, let's say Jock doesn't get it going, like that can fill that role. I think in a perfect world, Jock would have come back 2 weeks earlier. And this is not on Jock at all, right? It's just the timing of this. Not to say Jock should have been back 2 weeks earlier, but maybe you would have had 2 weeks more data to make that determination. All right, yes, he is showing signs. Or, man, we're not seeing it. We need to make a move. Because you're right. I think that Jock Peterson is someone they still believe can contribute. But, yeah, he's got to. He's got to start doing it. You know, I think, now what, two-thirds of the way through the season, right? My personal statistician, Matt Hicks, is next to me. He gives me the thumbs up there. So, yeah, they don't have a full runway, you know, the way that they maybe felt like they did earlier in the season. So it's a great question. I don't know how they're going to handle that because, you know, because of Jock's contract, I don't think they're going to DFA him. I don't think they're going to pay him nearly $20 million next year and whatever the prorated amount is this year to go play elsewhere. But they do need to figure out what to do with that spot because they need production desperately from their DH role. And unfortunately, you know, Jock wasn't just supposed to give them production as a DH. He was supposed to give them like middle of the order type production, regardless of position. And they really do need that.
Hey, Jared, I asked my buddy in the league this question, and I'll ask you. And I asked him, I said, what positions are most teams looking for in return for these relievers? And, you know, I was asking about the pitchers, position players, bats. And my guy said, depending on the team, but upside pitching is usually preferred. Is that something, are you getting a feeling, talking with the Rangers maybe, that they're giving you some ideas of, hey, if we're going to go do this, that maybe are they're not maybe in a mode of giving up pitching? It's got to be either the bats or the positional players, right?
Yeah, well, I guess Brian, it depends. I don't see the Rangers giving up Winston Santos for a really good reliever who will only be with them for the next 2 months. Okay. Now, if you told me that, like in a world in which Emmanuel Clase was not under investigation for gambling, that would be the type of deal because he's got a pretty favorable team option for the next two seasons or next three seasons. Or sorry, he's under contract through next year, and then I think he's got two team options. So you could have him for 3.5 seasons. I don't know that Winston Santos would be in play for Emmanuel Clase. I don't know how
how the Rangers value him, but that's the type of return in which a guy like that could be available. Now, let's say the Rangers do what the Angels just did and what the Rangers did last year, and let's go and acquire Andrew Chafin. Andrew Chafin last year, the Rangers hoped was going to be a big part of their bullpen and providing an option from the left side. He didn't pitch well for the Rangers, but they got him for not a whole lot, and he was a guy who conceivably, had he pitched better, could have really, really helped out the bullpen, filling a need that they had with their construction. So you can get the interesting thing with relievers is you can get impact relievers without giving up a lot. You know, I'll go back to a decade ago when the Rangers got Jake Diekman and Sam Dyson. Now, Jake Diekman was a part of the Cole Hamels deal, and maybe Jake Diekman's presence in that deal impacted the Rangers' give to the Phillies a little bit, but not a lot. You know, Jake Diekman, he wasn't a throw-in. That would be unfair to say, but the deal was really about Cole Hamels. And the Rangers felt like they saw something in Jake Diekman where they could turn around what had been a shaky time with the Phillies coming up as a prospect. The Rangers got Sam Dyson, who would go on to be their closer the next year, but a huge part of their bullpen that year for basically nothing. Tomas Tatis was what they gave the Marlins, if I recall, and he was like the third catcher on the team. You know, he was like a 4A catcher for that ball club. So I guess it just depends. And sometimes teams see a reliever, they see maybe what that guy does and feel like, hey, we can make this tweak and this guy could become a stud for us in ways he wasn't for whatever team he is currently on. So if you're looking for an Emmanuel Clase type who's obviously not available anymore, but a Joan Duran or a Ryan Helsley, then yeah, maybe you're going to have to give up a desirable pitching prospect. But if you're looking for a guy who's just a really good seventh inning guy, and those guys are important, I don't think you need to dig into your top 10 pitching prospects in order to get that guy. But, the one thing I'll say, Brian, is every year the market tells a totally different story. And so the minute you think you got it figured out, you don't. And so I say that the Rangers might be on the phone right now cooking up a deal for a guy that can pitch the seventh inning for them, and they're going to give up a top 10 pitching prospect. But I just typically that's not what you would see.
How do you think CY handles this dynamic that some of the insiders are reporting that there's more teams wanting high-quality relievers than there are available? I think it's 6-5 by Buster Olney's count. Does he say, well, this is a great opportunity to get to the front if we're willing to give what other teams aren't, or do you think he lets that market come to him?
Well, yeah, that's he's been aggressive, right? So we've had 2 years of Chris Young being the guy to call the shots. And remember, in 2023, he was really aggressive in going and getting Aroldis Chapman. Was it on July 1st or June 30th, whatever? He didn't want to wait for the market. And the Rangers were in a period in that season where they really just needed some bullpen help. They were leaking. And some years, you roll the dice that way and it works out. Other years, not so much. You know, this would have been a year maybe, and it's for any of the teams looking for relief help, maybe it would have been better for them to make a move a month ago with Felix Bautista going on the IL and with the Emmanuel Clase stuff. All of a sudden, there becomes a little higher price tag because the supply and demand has totally shifted in the last week. With those two big arms who a lot of people thought were going to be traded, now off the market. So, I think that, given the nature of, where we're at with the supply and demand, I guess you run the risk if you wait of another team screwing it up, because if you're looking for a reliever and you're waiting and the Angels or just pick a team and they go and get a guy and they set the market at a level higher than what you'd like and maybe a level higher than what you want to play with. Now you might be going to that next tier, but sometimes being the first one to make that move for an upper level reliever, someone who's maybe a tick higher in regard than Sir Anthony Dominguez, who was traded yesterday, maybe that would be advantageous. So Chris Young's always been aggressive. I'll say this, Gavin, I don't think he's afraid to be the first one in the pool, right? He wasn't 2 years ago, and I don't think he would be this year.
If you get swept, do you think that has any impact on their decision-making right now?
I don't think it has an impact on Chris Young's decision-making. I'd say this, from a financial standpoint, if I were to guess, if I'm an ownership group and I have certain feelings about, that side of things, they're human beings and they ride the emotional roller coaster too. Maybe that impacts, you know, whether or not, you know, they'd be willing to spend more or not spend more. I would say that, you know, it shouldn't, right? You know, three games out of 162 shouldn't impact your feeling that drastically, but I mean, we've seen it before. And the other thing we see too, Gavin, what if the Astros go and make a big trade in the next 5 minutes? You know, that absolutely, what if the Mariners go and make another move? You know, they already acquired Josh Naylor. That absolutely impacts teams. You know, they can say it doesn't, but it absolutely does. And so I think there are a few factors that come into play, but I would say having a clean, nice win tonight certainly would only help matters if Chris Young and his team are trying to, you know, convince themselves or convince ownership, hey, let's invest in this way or that way. It certainly doesn't hurt to win, but I don't know how much it moves the needle.
Everything all right with everybody? Like the pitching performances the last couple of nights? We spent so much time looking at the trade. We're here in California. Anything else on the top of your mind we need to know before we let you go?
Well, it was a sloppy game last night, and uncharacteristic of the Rangers because they've been so good defensively and they weren't. And I think last night was weird. It was the third time in franchise history the Rangers have out-hit a team by that much and lost, and it was the biggest margin of defeat in those games. So it was just kind of a wonky game. But Nathan Eovaldi this year is 6-2, or the team is 6-2 when Evo starts after a team loss. In the two games they lost, the Rangers scored a combined one run, so it really wasn't on him. So if you want a guy to take the mound to try and prevent a sweep, I feel like Nathan Eovaldi is probably your best bet.
Great stuff, Sands. Have a great night, and we'll catch you up with you on Friday.
All right, fellas. Thank you.
He's at Jared Sandler, brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. Thank you, sir. Brian brought us a practice recap, brought to you by Treeline by Hillwood. Coming up next, brother, what's in store?
Yeah, let's kind of get into some more of these players. I'm not going to talk about the stars. I'm going to talk about down-the-line guys. We'll do that next.